The Babylon Project podcast was our last best hope for reruns. It failed. But in the year of the Shadow War, it became something greater. Our last best hope for fandom. The year is 2017. The place, the Babylon Project podcast.
This is Maggie Egan, your ISN news anchor, and you're listening to the Babylon Project podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hi there, Babylon 5 fans. Welcome to another wonderful episode of the Raul is Right podcast.
Oh boy, here we go.
You're not on the wrong show. This is the Babylon Project podcast. And this is Raul, and joined as always by my friends Jim Arrowwood and JP Harvey. How are you guys tonight?
Great.
Doing awesome.
Yeah, you're going to have to forgive me if I'm a little froggy. This weather's been bouncing all over the place, and it's got my sinuses and throat a little cloggy.
Uh-oh.
Our wonderful editor will be able to hopefully make me sound intelligible. Same, you can't make me sound intelligent, but we'll have to settle for intelligible. Okay, Jim, What episode are we talking about tonight?
Well, tonight we have the penultimate episode of the third season, Shadow Dancing.
Oh, God, I hear a Bee Gees song coming on.
Don't do it.
It's times like these that I wish we were doing a video cast live for our fans. The look on Jim's face when I said that.
Yeah. Disco. No.
Disco here. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shadow dancing. There's a reason I was making the joke about the Raul was Right. Something I had said a long time ago kind of comes up in this episode, so we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Oh gosh. Anyway, let's go ahead and get ourselves set as far as what's going to be happening tonight. Jim, do you have a summary for us?
I do.
Archive access initiated.
Sheridan and Delenn are anticipating that the refugees in Sector 83 will be attacked by the shadows soon, and make plans to intercede. Delenn appeals to the League of Non-Aligned Worlds to provide ships for the coming fight, but at first they are reluctant because she is withholding information about where that battle is to take place. She finally convinces them that she and Sheridan have earned their trust, and then they agree to provide all the forces they can. Sheridan sends Ivanova and Marcus out in the White Star to monitor Sector 83. While there, they find a shadow scout vessel and give chase before it can send a distress call to the rest of the shadow fleet. As the scout is destroyed, a huge fleet of shadows arrive, but Sheridan's fleet is waiting in hyperspace for them. Sheridan and Delenn monitor and send orders to their ships while a huge battle takes place. While Sheridan's fleet is victorious, the victory comes with a high price. 2 Alliance vessels are lost for every shadow. The remaining shadows retreat. Back on the station, the War Council convenes and cannot understand why there was no attack on the station. The answer is not long in coming. While Delenn watches Sheridan sleep, Anna Sheridan arrives and introduces herself to Delenn. Dr. Franklin continues on his walkabout. When he hears a struggle near where he is, he attempts to stop two thugs from beating up on a third. One of the thugs stabs Franklin in the abdomen, and he begins to bleed out. As he lies on the floor, he begins to hallucinate and meet himself. He is forced to face the fact that he has run away from everything and is now running away from his life by not struggling to get help. Finally, he manages to get to a place where help is called and his life is saved in med lab. Well, there it is.
There it is. It's a pretty good summary of it.
Yeah.
That Franklin guy, he just won't die.
Yeah. We'll be getting to that, definitely.
Character files opened.
Okay, so who do we have on visiting us on the show tonight?
All right. Well, we have listed as guest starring Shirley Prestia as Barbara, who was the tourist on the station that was, should I say, rather verbose about her opinions. This is her only appearance on Babylon 5, and she has lots of credits, too, back to 1976, but nothing really in genre. So,
right.
Yeah. And also, we have as special guest starring
Laura Ingalls.
Yes, we have Melissa Gilbert starring as Anna Sheridan. This is her second of three appearances on Babylon 5. The first was an uncredited voice-only appearance. She's right. Best known for her portrayal of Laura Ingalls Wilder on Little House on the Prairie. She has credits back to 1967. She was on Batman, the animated series, as Barbara Gordon and Batgirl. And she was did an episode on Outer Limits. And she's also a director, a writer, and a producer, as well as an actress.
Okay. I think the last thing I saw her in, and this is a Wayne Henderson moment, was she was on Dancing with the Stars a couple seasons ago.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
That's one I managed to avoid.
Ditto.
I am going to add one comment. The husband's name was Doug Cox, and he has had some stuff going back with Teen Wolf and another huge pile of credits, some Knight Rider experience, some Quantum Leap experience. So he's had a little bit of presence in the genre.
Oh, okay.
But Melissa Gilbert, that's the big one. Now, I'm trying to think, did we talk about this before? Melissa Gilbert is not simply playing Anna Sheridan, John Sheridan's wife. She is also Bruce Boxleitner's wife.
Was.
Well, at least at was yes. At the time.
All the exes live in Texas, apparently.
Oh, gosh.
Well, and Melissa Gilbert, she is coming into this show as Anna Sheridan, but she is the second Anna Sheridan, because
right.
Way back when Sheridan got the message from his wife, it was a different actress that portrayed her.
Yeah, in fact, we're going to see a redo of that scene, if I'm not mistaken, on the next episode.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, they kind of recreate that scene, except with the correct Mrs. Sheridan.
Yeah.
Or the correct Mrs. X Mrs. Sheridan. Or.
Yeah. So should we stop dancing around the shadows and start dissecting this episode?
Or Dancing with the Stars, or...
No.
Yeah.
No. No stars.
Okay. Okay. And no stars, no Bee Gees. Okay.
Wow. Little House is okay. I used to love that. Well, I shouldn't say I used to. I love that show. But this is not the Little House Full of Prairie episode or show, and it's not the Shadow Dance, or it is a Shadow Dancing show.
It is a Shadow Dancing show.
Let's just get on with it.
Okay? All right.
Initiating plot analysis.
Well, not only is Jim having a Susan moment, but the episode starts with DeLynn having sort of a Susan moment with the league. And by that, I mean a whole cranky league with her pacing back and forth trying to convince them of something.
Yeah.
That something is she kind of wants to borrow their fleets for a secret mission. For a surprise, she's planning for the Shadows that she doesn't want to tell them about.
Mm-mm.
So give me your navies and I'll tell you about it when we get there.
Yeah. She's trying really hard to convince them to come in, and they are, I would say, justifiably worried that they're taking a big risk mm-hmm. by handing their ships over and leaving their own properties unprotected. So they're very reluctant.
You're right. I kind of get where they're coming from in a way.
Yeah. I think they really want to help all they can, but but it's going to be kind of tough if they leave themselves. You know, they don't want to get caught with their pants down.
Right. And even from her home world, she's limited in as far as the actual Mimbari ships she can bring, because she's only got, you know, she's not going to be able to get cruisers from the warrior cast, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So she's in a little of the same boat, but she notes that they do have some additional ships.
Yeah.
That was tense when I forget who it was in the room says, well, what have you brought, or something to that effect? And the answer back was, I couldn't believe the answer back. It made sense to me after the next scene in this part of the storyline, but the answer back was, well, we've provided everything we can spare. And DeLynn didn't say that. I was going to say Bill Mumy did, but...
Right.
I thought, well, so you just ask these guys to leave their home worlds uncovered, and they say as much. We can't be defenseless. And the one guy says, well, what have you brought? And everything we can spare. And it didn't sound like she was asking them to give me what you can spare. It was, I need your fleets.
Yeah.
So it was it was an awkward moment. It was tense.
Yeah. But see, now what she is not telling the league, and that we know from last episode.
Well, she did say additional ships.
Yeah. What they don't know is that there's going to be that big attack on that one area of space where all the refugees have been herded into. They don't, the league does not know this.
Right.
So, and she's reluctant to reveal this to them just in case.
Right.
So DeLynn is not as worried about them not being covered because she knows where the big Shadow fleet's going to be.
But you can see them with what they do know. And that's random attacks, being very worried.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a plan. What's the plan? I'm not going to tell you, but I need your fleet. And all that's going through their minds is, we don't know where these guys are going to hit next. And you're telling me, you're telling all of us to expose ourselves. But I like the scene. It was a lot of good tension there.
Yeah.
I really like the way she just kind of brushes off that huge white star fleet as some additional ships.
Yeah. I like the way she's dressed as Ranger One.
Yeah, that too.
That was pretty cool.
Now, we're also, Sheridan is also taking action in this as well. He's talking about putting your people on the line. He's sending Ivanova and Marcus on what is essentially a suicide mission.
Could very well be.
As JP had noted, the Shadows are herding all these refugees into a trap. and they need some scouting intel on when the shadows arrive. So it's not exactly, I think they said it's about a 50-50 chance, best case,
yeah,
for their being able to get back.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, that had to be hard for him to do.
Right. My only grump about this scene is there's an awful lot of reset exposition. Mm-hmm. You know, filling in Ivanov and Marcus on the whole nature of what's going on and considering their roles in the command structure.
How do they not know?
It's like, wouldn't they already have? Yeah, they already know all of this.
Yeah.
In fact, the moment he said scout, the moment he called the two of them in separately, like, you know, to get separately together away from everyone else. They had to have a good idea what was coming.
Oh, yeah. So what, JP, what would it be like for a commander to order not only your second in command, let alone your friends, to go out there and you got to go stick your neck out for me?
Yeah, the burden of command is a phrase that gets tossed around in the military about that. And it's not just commanders, it's people with any authority to put others in that position. I think I said this before, you know, one of the things that we start with our officer candidates or officer trainees, depending upon which service you're in, is telling them that one of their responsibilities is to spend the lives of their troops if necessary. And that, so you do your best to prepare people for that, but historically, they're people that fail. They can't do it. And a real good movie is an aside to watch. You guys have probably seen it. It's called 12 O'Clock High.
Oh, yeah.
And the premise of the movie, just since I brought it up, listeners may be curious, is there's a bomb group commander in World War II who at one point in the movie, the phrase that's used to describe his problem is that he over-identifies with his troops. And his bomb group becomes combat ineffective for all kinds of reasons. People are sick, they're demoralized, just every issue in the world. And you could argue that the commander's problem in part was he couldn't get the unit to stand up and go to war, knowing that in that war, those guys like them in B-17 units, were losing up to 50% of their peers. And so he struggled with that. He's relieved of command. And then the new guy comes in and, you know, and the story goes on from there about how he revitalizes or reestablishes that unit's combat capability. But it's a horrible responsibility to know that you're, even not a high risk mission like that, you're ordering people into positions where they could be harmed or killed. So it's difficult.
Yeah. I can imagine how someone might be effective doing that, and then after a while, feeling like they have a lot of blood on their hands, and I just can't do this anymore.
And if you're in a position too, where you're one of those commanders or somebody associated with the commander that has to write a letter to the family, you know, one of those is incredibly difficult. Could you imagine back to the World War II scenario? And, or in the case of this story, right, in Babylon 5, they're facing a war. So a couple of people out on a high-risk mission is bad enough, but they're setting up for huge losses, potentially. Is how do you tell those families, I told your husband, your wife, your dad, your mom, to do the thing that they did that killed them? And you're right, the burden, the blood on your own hands, the possibility you think that is real.
I can kind of relate to it from my job. I've talked about it, the job in generalities before, but one of the things that was a part of my job was to convince patients to let me stop their hearts to see if I can start them back up again.
Yeah.
So it's a weighty thing. I had to tell. I had a little for that company. I had a little lecture for our engineering team that came down to, I can guarantee you this: you are going to be responsible if you work on this project. You will be responsible for killing two people, at the minimum, guaranteed. because of the software, this device will fail to give a shot to someone who needs it, and that person is going to die. Because of the software, this device is going to shock someone who doesn't need it. It's going to stop their heart, and they're going to die. When you look at the difference between that and the number of people that we're going to be saving, you have to be comfortable with this if you're going to be working on this project. And I did have a couple people leave.
And I all I can say is I've never had that position that I've had to deal with. So I'm kind of thankful for that.
Back to this scene, because it's an awkward scene, I thought. In fact, I think it was an unnecessary scene. And until the next scene that we're going to talk about comes up, and I realized that to do something with the tension that was created when Delenn was talking to the council or to the league, they had to have a break in that scene so that she can come back. And this became the thing that we went off to be distracted by or to learn something from so that she can return back to the league to get the verdict. As you guys recall, when she finished her having her Susan moment, she said, think about it, make your decisions, whatever, but you don't have long. And she left. And then we end up in this scene where we get the heavy, I'm going to send you off on the suicide mission. Like you, Raul, I thought, man, there's a lot of kind of unnecessary exposition. I'm not even sure this scene had to be in here until the next scene hit. And then I realized they had to have something to break apart the two Delenn scenes. I don't know if this was the best choice, but
it could have it could have been done without the extent of exposition. If it was Sheridan giving his orders,
but that I thought that this was a throwaway scene. They had to have something in there to leave that tension built up when Delenn left the league, so that she could come back in the next scene and get the answer that she said, you know, figure it out and let me know. Because that the next scene is, you know, is kind of the critical one.
Yeah. You know, JP, I'm just sitting here thinking about this for a moment. This was too recent. It would have only been maybe 2 weeks ago. I was about to ask if you thought maybe this was simply to, you know, usually when you have exposition like that, you're resetting something for the viewers. It's like, oh yeah, don't forget they were trying to herd everyone here, right? But that was just, what, 1 week or 2 weeks ago that was. And it wasn't after this big, long hiatus where you might want to remind people. So
that little piece of this episode, maybe that was written late on a Friday or early on a Monday or something, and the writers weren't, you know, they weren't in the groove at the time, and so we got that. But
the only writer was Joe Straczynski on this one. And, you know, there is a minimum amount of time that has to be filled with in the show.
Yeah, so. And it wasn't bad. The scene didn't put me off. It was just struck me as extra.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're on the same page. We're completely.
But if it wasn't there, something else had to be there. I don't know what that would be.
But. Yeah. But you are right. It did need to break. It needed the break for what came next, where there's just the lone Drazi sitting there waiting for Delenn, looking like he was about to tell her, sorry, can't help you here. Yeah, the first time it's like, oh boy, so they're going to do this with just the White Stars, huh?
I thought he was trying to get a nap in.
But she'll get her ships.
Mm-hmm. And he lets her know, you know, what is at stake. And Delenn knows what's at stake.
Yep.
I mean, this has been mapped out, it's been planned, and they are, I would say, better than 90% sure of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a real problem if they're wrong.
Yeah. Heck, it could be a real problem if they're right.
So this is the Veer Londo drill over again, right? Veer Londo's running Veer knowing a lot more than Veer knows. And Veer later learns he had a plan all along. You know, whether he liked it or not is not the issue. Now you've got these allies in the league being told, I need you to do something. And they're not being told why. They don't like it, just like Veer didn't like it. But there right. is a bigger plan. There are things in play and that they don't know about and, according to the script, can't know about. Oof. Mm-hmm. Difficult.
Well, we've got good reason. They've got good reason to not want to tell the league what's going on, frankly, because we've already seen enough to get the idea that, there's probably some shadow infiltration here and there.
Oh, no doubt.
Holes in security.
Yep.
Yeah, Morden comes and goes as he pleases, so.
Yeah, and while need to know might be something that's military people are used to, it's certainly not something the politicians appreciate. But Susan leaves on her mission with Marcus to an old Egyptian blessing. And then we get another big block of exposition. Again, this time Zach and Mike about Franklin's walkabout. And Mike is having his doubts about whether or not he did the right thing. So
yeah, and Zach counsels him.
Oh, see, I thought this was another strange scene because Mike is lamenting that he doesn't think that he or they, certainly he's talking about himself, did enough and that they kind of let Franklin walk away when just last week or the week before, Franklin is engaged by just not Garibaldi, others, but engaged again
right.
for information and help. You know, I need to know about your Underground Railroad. And the impression you get watching that scene is, quit bugging me. You people keep coming and asking me for things. Mm-hmm. I guess Mike didn't know that. So I get it. He's got a personal burden that he felt he should have done more. But Franklin's not lacking for attention. It seems people in the command staff are pretty routinely hunting him down for stuff. And he made it pretty clear, I'll give you the help, but you need to leave me alone. And now we got Mike going, I really should have talked to him more. And I just thought it was a funny, Mike, you don't know that your friends have been pestering Dr. Franklin for...
Yeah, Mike is not one to have regrets for one thing. And for the other, watching this scene, they seemed like they were a little awkward in their acting, like it was something that wasn't well rehearsed or something that was thrown in quickly or whatever.
Or just uncomfortable. Could have just been discomfort with it.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know how much the actors would know about the continuity of what works. But yeah, they just seem like, we'll do this scene.
Yep. Oh, and speaking of the actors and just doing this scene. Okay, you had mentioned Zach counseling Michael on the subject. Am I the only one who saw the irony of this, considering Jeff Conway's real life? Makes the heart weep a little.
Oh, yeah. I know. You look back and it is a very sad thing.
Yeah, because it was just a few years ago that he passed away from drug and alcohol abuse.
Yeah.
So, okay.
We get another weird scene.
You know, hey, I got to step in real quick and let folks know. We've all been talking about weird scenes here. That does not mean we do not love this particular episode. But when you actually go into it from a more analytical point, there's definitely some things that'll make you kind of scratch your head.
I'm glad you said that, because I was thinking the same. It's like, it sounds like we hate this episode. And it's not the case. It's an awesome episode.
It's one of my favorites.
I like to think in my head that the episode isn't going to start till after the next scene. This was all preamble or whatever. And then it really starts after the next weird scene.
Boom. JP, what you said. Jim, go ahead. And what were you going to say about this weird scene?
Well, I was wondering the same thing that you put in the notes there, Raul. Why are Earth patriots and Clark supporters wandering around on the station?
As tourists, no less.
As tourists, and rather loudly bemoaning everything and how bad these people are. What are they doing there? I thought there was an embargo.
Yeah, that exactly my thoughts.
Holes in security.
This scene to me, just it was like, why is this here?
It fills time and shifts attention to Franklin. Hey, Franklin's here.
Oh,
expect something with his story tonight.
Yeah. Didn't that little, that's the one where the little kid's ball mm-hmm. rolled over to him and yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah. I don't know.
But JP's right because it's like commercial break comes back Z minus 6 days. So yeah, now the episode starts.
So we have had now 1 day since the end of the episode previous.
Right.
And we still don't know what Z minus is.
It'll make sense real soon.
Oh, well, of course. But we got to pretend like we don't know.
Of course.
Yes.
Coming back from the commercial break, we open with the obvious that Marcus doesn't seem to have trouble with Mimbari beds.
Well, he's been trained, I would hope.
Right, right. Though, apparently, as we find out a little later, he does like 4 posters.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a scene, I don't think. But
they're private. They're, you know, they're by themselves. It was very Marcus, though.
Yeah, he's putting on the moves big
and
time.
And the sweet talk in Mimbari, so she doesn't know what he says was cool. You know, I thought the when they're having that 4 poster bed chat. And he said, I forget what exactly he said. It might have been when he said, oh, I like 4 poster beds. But it was one of those moments where it was real clear this is getting flirty. And she was looking away from him and she turns her head. And as she starts to turn her head, I thought,
I was going to mention that.
You know, oh boy, here come the laser beams. And, but as she looked at him, her whole face changed. And all I jotted down was, look at Ivanova's eyes. And I thought she was going to kill him. And when she fully looked at him, it was like, she likes him back. I thought I was going to see death. And instead I saw her face and her eye. That was an awesome acting scene, right? I thought.
Is it so much that she likes him back or she is getting used to him?
It could be.
Him? Okay.
Yeah.
You know, in any case, in my personal opinion, I think Ivanova needs some Velcro.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think she would probably get a lot more sleep with Velcro.
Yeah, because now, Jim, you're getting to the real question. Is she going to have any better luck than Sheridan?
I don't know.
I think a little less luck. The slide off headshot was
that was classic.
Great.
And I mean, just boom, she goes away, and
yeah, she's got an act for physical comedy, and they took advantage of it here.
Yes.
Okay, Delenn's status report. You know, I love the way she just kind of comes in like a good little soldier and hands him the report and. You know, just the looks and expression and everything. Mira Furlan can say a lot without using any words at all.
Oh, absolutely.
It was just fun watching her there. And of course, they have the little argument about insisting on going. what I like about it though is Sheridan's hesitation is less about their relationship and a lot more about, okay, we've got the entire command leadership of this whole shadow war going on the front lines here in some respect, you know, in one way or another, on a mission that could be considered not, you know, not just Marcus and Susan, but the rest of them. It could just as well be a suicide mission.
Well, there is a lot at stake, and they're hoping they're going to be right in what they're doing, but this could, this battle, upcoming battle, where if it takes place, could be a huge turning point.
Yes.
So
yeah, and of course, that's why she is Ranger One, so she has to go.
Yeah, we're looking at either the possibility of a huge success or a catastrophic failure coming up here.
Right, but it does turn personal because when they're done, she dangles out the carrot of spending the night with him when they get back.
Yeah.
Except it's not, the look on it, except it's not quite. Okay, we're going to hear this line a lot over the next season and a half, I guess. When Mambari become close as we have become close.
Yeah, and Sheridan is looking at her like, oh, wow, 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 wow.
Have you noticed, watch this as we go through, it's like every time that line comes up, it looks like she's about to crack up laughing.
Yeah.
Because there's always something in it that's going to be, it's like, whoa, wait a second.
But we're going to spend the night together, but it's not like you think. Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And her explanation about cutting things off. You've got that queued up, right, Jim?
Coming right up.
Go for it.
With the fleet. We're in this together. Right. And afterward, when we're finished with this, we will spend the night together. Not like that. You see, when Minbari become close, as we have become close, it is tradition that I spend three nights together. The male sleeps, and the female watches.
Watches what?
During the day, we all put on the face we think will do us the most good. Mm. But at a certain point in your sleep, as you relax, your true face is revealed. If the female approves of his true face, she will stay two more nights and continue to observe.
Mm. What if she doesn't like what she sees?
Then they go their separate ways. If he insists she stay one more night, she can leave when he falls asleep, file a complaint with the elders, even cut off his access to her family.
Oh. What if she does like what she sees?
Later, history awaits.
And Sheridan says, excuse me, I'll be in my bunk.
That's right.
I was going to say, no, he's not Jane Cobb.
Now, if it was Jane, he'd be in his bunk with his guns.
That kind of reminds me of something from this is my rifle, this is my gun. No, I'm not going to go there. This is really degraded, I'm telling you.
Yeah. I've got Box Lightner sells it though.
Yeah.
The expression on his face, but every time it comes up to one of these when we have become close scenes, it's something like this.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh. I think we should go ahead and move on before we degrade it too much further.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't had enough Franklin. We need to see what he's doing.
That's right. We got shown Franklin. Hey, he's still here. And he steps in on what turns out to be more or less a drug deal and gets hurt badly.
Oh, yeah. You know, you'd have thought he'd know. Here's three people and two of them are beating up on one and they're doing a pretty thorough job. And the guy they're beating up on, he's no... weakling, obviously.
Yeah, he looks like someone who should be in the WWE.
Yeah. And Franklin's going to jump in, suffering from withdrawal from stims, and save the day. Uh-huh, sure.
And what happens is exactly what you would expect to happen.
Yeah.
The things you should know better than to get involved in. And I will tell you this, I will give Richard Briggs a lot of credit. He does a darn good job selling it.
Oh, I agree.
Because you feel it. Well, we're going to have to wait a little more on Franklin because Susan is being innovative. I wonder how long it took it for that idea to come to her.
I don't know, but I'll tell you what, it sure didn't last long.
Nope. Yeah, but it seems that the Shadows have sent their own scout.
Yeah.
I guess great minds think alike.
You knew she was going to get called away as soon as she closed her eyes. It was ding, 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 time to run to the bridge.
Especially because she looked pleased with herself.
Yeah.
I got this wired. Now I'm going to sleep. Yeah, okay.
It's a good thing none of the other Minbari came by for a nap.
Right. Took all their pillows.
Yeah, which didn't look comfortable to begin with.
Well, remember, they've got a large bone in the back of their head, so... But, yeah, the Shadows have sent their own scouts, and it's sort of a damned-if-you-do, damned-if-you-don't situation. Mm. Where their White Star has been hiding is about to come into the open because things move in space.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't shift position without giving away their position, and they can't stay put without giving away their position. So they are going to be seen.
Yeah, it's going to be a desperate situation.
It's a matter of who can stop who at this point. Mm-hmm. And we get a quick cut to Delenn showing Sheridan the Minbari Tactical Center.
Yeah.
And boy, I love that tactical center. JP, wouldn't you have loved to have something like that?
Yeah, that was cool. Austere, minimalist, I think somebody we know would say. But I love it. Hey, there's no screens. Oh, don't worry.
There'll be plenty. You'll be able to see everything.
Yeah. And Sheridan looked a little bit like a kid in a candy store. As it hit him what he was looking at. He wasn't seeing it all, but he was, you know, I think he looked like, wow, this is neat.
Yeah.
From here, you'll be able to see the whole war.
Right. Okay, Franklin, that's a lot of blood. Now, admittedly, blood tends to spread out a lot. And a little, let's just say a little goes a long way. But even for that, that's still a lot of blood.
Yeah, it did seem like a bit much, but...
I've cut half my finger off, and it wasn't a lot of blood, but there were red stains everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And if you've ever been in an OR on the doing the work side, there's not a lot of blood, but there's a whole lot of red tagged. Sponge it, you know, yeah. 4x4 gauze, you know, that's a sponge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, a little goes a long way, but that's still, for that, that's a lot of blood.
Yeah.
He does meet himself, finally, yeah. Though.
He does, and he's a bit of a smart arse.
Of course. And the self that he meets, I don't kind of blame the self that he meets. But we'll get to that next.
Yep.
Now, this, I don't quite get. The Shadow Scout with Susan and Marcus, it turns around, that they injure it enough, it turns around and it goes for a ram.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe they're just trying to make sure that Susan's trying to stop the Shadow so the Shadows can't get a signal out. Yeah. I guess the Shadow Scout's trying to stop the White Star so it can't get a signal.
Right.
And I love the line. That's a lot of ships, particularly because that is a lot of ships.
Well, it just never seems to end. I mean, I don't know how long they had those ships coming in. It seemed like a long time. and there were, it just never stopped.
Let's just say the show continues to set records for the number of vessels on screen. And Susan's line, who wants to live forever?
Mm-hmm.
Marcus does.
Right out of Conan. Yeah, no. Marcus does. Which is also ironic.
I suppose now you want to play a Queen song.
Huh? No.
I suppose now you want to play a Queen song.
Oh, what was that? Who's going to stop me now?
No. Obviously, you're not a Highlander fan.
Oh, I am a Highlander fan. Okay. Well, I wasn't thinking Highlander.
Yeah, Who Wants to Live Forever. It's one of the songs from the movie.
Okay.
But this is not...
I wasn't thinking that.
The Highlander Project Podcast. It is the Babylon Project Podcast.
And to answer Sheridan's question that we just switched to, no, Ivanova did not get out in time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was his, the question he was asked, because Marcus sends the signal, and the signal gets out, and we cut to Sheridan getting the attack message. Okay, after a short commercial break, I think here, we get back to the mealy-mouthed, self-indulgent foundationist crap scene. In short, even Franklin says Raoul was right. As far as not okay, I'm going to put this in the context.
Not again.
Yes. Again. If you remember when he went on Walkabout, I was ragging hard on Franklin, his running away. And
you know, you know what, JP? I'm really afraid this guy's about to break his arm.
Well, okay. Well, let Franklin say it. I don't have to.
You know what your problem is? All your life, you've run away from everything. Home didn't work out. Wouldn't talk to your father, so you just walked away. You didn't have the patience for a long internship back home, so you just ran off and started hitchhiking on starships. You didn't want to turn over your precious notes on Minbari biology during the war, so you just burned them instead and walked away again. You use work to run away from your personal life, and STEMs to run away from your work. And right now, you are running away from everything. Don't you die on me yet. I'm not through with you. You finally had it all, didn't you? You had a good job. People who cared about you, and you messed it up. I have to leave before they fire me. I have to go find myself. What a bunch of mealy-mouthed, self-indulgent foundationist crap. Take responsibility for your actions, for crying out loud. You go in there, and you fight for what matters to you. Don't just walk away because it's easier. What'd you say? I'm sorry. I forgot. You're too busy dying, aren't you? I guess that's a little bit more important to you right now. Huh? Well, fine. You do what you want. Because you and I, we parted ways a long time ago. So you go ahead and you die, because I really don't care anymore.
Well,
I didn't hear him say Raoul was right.
Yeah, not in so many words, I guess, but no.
I'll just leave it at back that way back when I started ragging on Franklin about walking away, I said, this will come up again before it's all over.
Yeah, it was almost like you've seen the show before. Isn't that weird?
Oh, yeah. Hey, and Franklin was a lot nicer than I was about it.
Oh, my gosh. So like you said earlier, he succeeds in the walkabout. He meets himself.
Yep.
Yep. Okay, Raoul, you're right. Let's move on.
Okay. The White Star is still stranded. They're going to get their power to the engine soon, you know, from the ramming. But apparently not soon enough. Fortunately, fleet arrives. And did I mention I love that tactical center?
Now we get to see it, right?
Yeah.
Not the dark room. We get to see it do its job.
Right. Totally cool.
Yeah. What is it with the Minbari and black rooms and spotlights?
Cheap sets.
Oh. Okay.
Or I guess the end season or the end series explanation would be either minimalist thinking or cheap decorator bills.
Yeah, could be.
Or my take on it, it's in the script.
Okay, speaking of it's in the script, JP, this is a question for you. It starts out with some, you know, more specific direction,
mm-hmm.
but just finishing it up with a loose break and attack, especially with that many enemy ships, it's like, okay, the rest of you guys, you're on your own, go kill someone. Was that a little, that just struck me as, okay, that's not exactly what I would call the soundest of doctrines.
Yeah.
That, you know, after all, this is not a medieval grand melee.
Right. I didn't think about it that way watching it. I just assumed there was some volume of planning behind the engagement. We don't get to see what it is. We hear little bits of it, or corrections to the plan. But it didn't surprise me that as they posture to fight and then the fight's on, that he's got just some execute word, right? Break an attack or everybody go or...
So there was already a... You just sort of assumed that the commanders and the captains had been appropriately briefed already.
Yeah, it wasn't a do your own thing, break an attack. It was, okay, execute. Did you see... I think I've used this movie before as an example for something else, but Black Hawk Down, when they're getting ready to go in and execute the op at the beginning of the movie, and they just use one code word, Irene.
Uh-huh.
And the word doesn't communicate anything. It's like a quarterback telling the center to hike the ball.
Okay.
All it is the signal to do what you were told to do, to execute. So I when that scene came and went, the first time I ever saw it in rewatches, I just went to it as that's go. Okay, everybody, go.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So he made some initial adjustments from his eyes on,
right,
and then set the rest of the team on what their orders had been.
Run the plays that I call, you know, that kind
of. That makes perfect sense.
But right, otherwise it would be a little bit weird. That's your plan, break and attack. Pick a target and go get it.
Right.
Well, there's no strategy in that. There's no tactics in that. That's just a mess. But
yeah, furball.
And you can't just sit there and put all of that in. You can't put all of that planning. You've only got 42 minutes.
Right.
That you can fail.
So what we got was the quarterback snapping the ball, or the center snapping the ball to the quarterback at that point.
And thank you, because I wasn't asking that from a snark or from a pick on. That it really was. It's like, what exactly is going? You know, I just didn't quite get it. So thank you. I'm glad Franklin's is annoying to Franklin. I like the way that what they do here. They're using the cuts to Franklin to pace the battle sequence, and it really works.
It makes Franklin more tolerable, doesn't it?
Well, no. you're gonna see me swing around on this because Richard Biggs is really selling it. Like I said before, he's really selling the whole Franklin.
Yeah, he's given a chance to show his acting chops without hitting on some chick.
Right, and he's got them.
Yeah,
he's definitely got them here. But back to the main point of it, of the what's going on here, and I'm not suggesting it from the standpoint that Franklin bit's filler, because you've got that, you know, it's a contrast of battles. You got that one little individual battle in the middle of down below, and you've got masses of ships in a battle for the survival of the galaxy, kind of contrasting back and forth. In a way, it's almost like the battle going on outside and the battle going on inside when the Earth Alliance attacked.
Mm-hmm.
Only on a different scale on both ends. But that battle is just totally amazing.
It is.
And one of the things I like about it, contrary to what up to that point you typically would see with sci-fi or Trek, or so, ships don't just vaporize or explode into nothing. And that... You know, seeing the ships in pieces the way they are, for me, it just made it hit home even more. It's like, oh, crap, that ship has just been cut in half in the vacuum of space.
Yeah.
And to the point where even the debris field is a risk.
It was good. I think he could have done what you just described and make it simple. But doing what he did kept it more correct and made the fight messy.
Exactly. That's what I think that's exactly what I meant when I was talking about it hitting home.
Yeah.
You really get the idea that it's not just little ships going boom, boom, boom.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of gives you a feeling of the price of it.
Yeah. War's a messy business.
Uh-huh. But at the end of the day, the shadows run.
Yeah.
And, oh, at the end there, did that half of a white star kind of doing that slow drift tumble by just kind of hit you there?
That hurt a little.
That hurt.
And and did you catch that we see that ship get cut in half like a scene or two before? It's just quick on the screen. And about the time that it registered, I think that white star just got cut in half. And then flash forward to this part, you see one of the halves floating by. It's like, yep, that's what I saw.
We see it in space, right. Yes. And then we see it again from a different perspective from Sheridan's tactical command.
Yes.
But so they won. Yeah, they won. But what was the cost of winning? And I think that was the message that they were trying to get through to us.
Yeah. A lot of sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. So we get Franklin on his way to Medlab.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there has been some comments about that scene in the past. Our editor, Troy, sent a comment in. I'm going to let one of you guys address it.
Take it, JP.
Talking about going down the hallway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the trip down the hallway.
He's got his friends pushing him down the hallway, and then flash forward, there's a scene where one of those people who were pushing him down the hallway says, oh, I heard about Franklin. And people say, well, you were there, you were pushing him down the hallway, and what the backstory is, coming from what Lurker's Guide and a few other sources, was that the orderlies that were pushing Franklin on the gurney were orderlies, and in Franklin's Franklin's hallucinating, and he sees, right, he's lost blood. He sees the people that he needs to deal with the most for a variety of reasons. So it's not an issue that somebody was right there with him when he's on the gurney and then later says, oh, I heard about him. It's his hallucination versus the real world later.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool little point.
Yeah. Franklin's hallucinating. They didn't just jump. You know, it wasn't Sheridan and company that was wheeling him into Medlab.
No.
Yeah, that's what Franklin saw.
Right. And we do find out the cost. They won, but with a 2-to-1 loss of assets. So for every shadow vessel destroyed, they lost 2, which really doesn't sound like a good doctrine as far as acceptable losses are going.
Yeah, I don't know if they planned that. You know, when you say it's doctrine, like that was the plan. And the other thing that we don't know is, I don't think we know how big and bad. We know it was 2-to-1 based on the battle.
Yeah.
I think that's all that we know. We don't know our, you know, we the Babylon 5 side, the good guys, the allies, we know how big our total capability is, but we don't know what the Shadows really have. But the Shadows don't really know what we have either, probably. So,
well, we got an idea that the Shadows do have a pretty good idea of what we had, with the exception of the White Star Fleet.
Right. And I think that's good planning on the good guys' side to assume that the enemy knows the most that is reasonable to know. But a 2-to-1 loss ratio in the battle, you know, it goes back to the B-17s, right? You know, we were consistently losing up to 50% of our air crews, aircraft and people. That doesn't sound like a winning strategy. But when you pull back from those individual sorties that bomb groups and squadrons did, and you look at the effect that that had, even with the loss on the bigger war, you make that assessment, said, well, on a grand scheme, it's worth the loss.
It's a grand...
And so this is another one of the scenes where when I see the 2-to-1, I go, wow, that's a tactical, a huge price to pay.
Right.
But if they're saying that that's a win, not just a tactical win, then I'm going to assume that that was an acceptable loss in the bigger scheme.
Yeah, they gave the Shadows a bloody nose.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
A good one.
Now, I have to come clean on something else. I'm cheating, too. Because I'm kind of biased. My thoughts there when I wrote that was biased, because I'm thinking of the Shadow Fleet we see in season 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
When we see just how many ships both the Shadows and the Vorlons have.
Right.
So, yeah.
But I don't think these guys went into this fight saying, well, if we lose 2-1, that's still a win. I think that was the real consequence of the battle, but they won. And
right.
And apparently they feel they can recover from that. But yeah, that stinks. If that was the whole war, they would have won by the skin of their teeth and not have been able to fight again probably for a while. But it sounds like there's more to it than this big battle.
And there is a significant point here, and Jim kind of mentioned it as far as giving them the bloody nose. And as I've got in my notes, you know, you really get the impression that the Shadows aren't in the habit of losing to the younger races.
Right.
So that's got to shake them up. And
oh, it does.
You think there's going to be some sort of significant reaction here.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see that in the very next episode.
Oh, no, we'll see the layup of it in the very next scene. It's like we get, this lone shadow vessel drifting across the hyperspace on a mission. And then we get this Z-4 day wording on the screen.
Yeah.
But before we get that, we'll just leave it at, we've got some bro bonding between Mike and Franklin as they make up, which gives us some time to see a lone shuttle from the lone ship. So there's definitely something happening here. And we get a discussion with Susan and Delin about what should be the obvious question.
Why is B5 not harassed?
JP, you nailed it. Why are the Shadows leaving Babylon 5 alone?
Yeah, they have to know that's a command and control point.
The command and control point at this stage, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that seems to go back, the discussion leads back to that dream we had from last season when Sheridan met Talon and we had Kosh in his head. That whole discussion about you are the hand and the fact that he sees evil Sheridan sort of as a reflection of himself. Apparently you get the idea that Sheridan's sort of a crux that they can't touch for some reason. Now, of course, the question comes up. We just, as Jim put it, a great way of phrasing it, we gave them a bloody nose. We handed them a defeat they absolutely did not expect. So why should the Army of Light assume that the Shadow response is going to be military?
Right, or only military.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to resort to a different kind of warfare.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that's definitely what we'll be seeing next. Well, we close out the Franklin story. He's unofficially running Med Lab with all the wounded coming in from the fight. And Sheridan makes it official.
Yep. Gives him his job back.
Right. And Steven explains, kind of fills him in on what he was doing. He pretty much admits all of it. And I'm not going to say it.
Good. Oh, you can say it.
Raul, even Franklin admits Raul was right.
Okay.
Both Franklins have now.
That's what drugs will do to you.
He gets a communication that Delin is awaiting his pleasure.
Strange phrasing.
And...
Oh, my.
Well, this little sleep scene gets interspersed with what just from the music and the way it's first-person shooter perspective of someone coming onto the station.
Yeah, and, you know, people's reaction as she walked by kind of puzzled me.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it almost looked like something odd. Some of it looked just annoyed.
Well,
as far as, you know, the way she was shoving through, but some of it did look like, who is this?
Well, the elevator, the people came off the elevator looked like they wanted to be anywhere else but there for that moment.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not pushing it off on the idea of, gee, everyone's recognizing her, because obviously not. But just the aura that comes being, whoever it is under some sort of shadow's influence. Obviously, they came from the shadow, from Zahadum, through the shadow vessel, you know, before they got there. So I just kind of put it off to that feel.
Oh, well.
Yeah. But someone certainly recognizes her. And my wife, yeah, Anthea, made the note that, Dylan is definitely liking what she sees.
I don't think there was ever any doubt in Dylan's mind.
Of course not.
She's putting him through the motions.
Uh-huh.
She's playing him like a penny whistle is what she's doing. But I guess that's a Minbari way.
Yeah.
He doesn't, you know, want her to cut off his access.
Yeah.
Right.
To her family, of course.
Well, as far as the someone coming on, Zach wakes Susan up and kind of warns him that something's up.
Yeah. And Susan's like, look, this is a space station. People come and go all the time. Leave me the hell alone. I want to go to sleep.
Yeah. Well, we get back to Delin's time jump from War Without End. Mm-hmm. Except a few little extra details show up.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out just why she dropped that snow globe. Did anyone have any doubt at some point? Naturally, the dead wife is going to show up.
Actually, the first time I saw this, I did not expect it.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Oh, wow.
I don't want to dislike Laura Ingalls. That's my problem. And I don't like her right now.
Come over to the Nelly camp. We have cookies.
Oh, God. I was sitting in last season when we first, you know, had that little playthrough about interplanetary expeditions when the other lady was playing his wife,
right?
You know, on the fill-in role. I'm sitting there thinking, oh boy, you know she's going to show up.
Yeah.
And you've got the last words of this episode?
I do.
Liam.
Hello. You must be Delenn. I'm Anna Sheridan, John's wife.
Now, I know I've got a pretty well-tuned ear, but there was no mistaking who that was when I heard it the first time in that other episode. I knew who the voice belonged to. And so I guess I just didn't put two and two together, because I knew that Sheridan's wife was the lady that played Ishara Yar, yeah.
You couldn't imagine Laura Ingalls making Nellie look nice. That's your problem.
Well, Nellie got nice. I mean, later on, before Nancy came on the show.
Oh, gosh.
But
this is not, Jim, this is not the Little House on the Prairie podcast.
Well, it could be.
It could be.
No, actually, it's kind of neat, because I wasn't going to bring this up before, but the actress that played Nellie, Allison Arngrim, was at Ozfest last year.
Uh-huh.
And she was, I got her autograph. I got to visit with her. Very nice person. And
I've heard her interviewed before, and she is the absolute sweetest person you could possibly imagine.
Oh, she is, and hilarious too. And I got her book, got her autographed book. It's called Confessions of a Prairie Bitch. Yeah, that's what it's called. And I have yet to have a chance to read it, but yeah, I won't take it any farther, because she told some really funny stories, but.
Oh.
As you say, not the Confessions of a Prairie Bitch podcast. We need to wrap this one up.
Yes, we do. And we wrap this one up with Z minus 2 days.
2 days. Okay. Z, we're still down. Now we've gone from 6 days down to 2 days. So all the events in this episode have taken place over 4 days.
Yep.
Does that seem odd?
It does until you think about the time it takes to travel. Hyperspace is still travel. It's still travel time. It's just not instantaneous.
Okay. So we had travel and battle took 4 days. Franklin right. suffered for 4 days?
No, he spent... And that's... You remember... What was it? JP, correct me if I... Was it 2 days he was in the... That he was out before he woke up?
I think it was 2 days.
Okay.
But I can't... I can't be sure.
Because I think... the wound that he had was to the abdomen. He would have bled out rather rapidly.
Well, given all the blood that was on the floor in the one scene, I think he had a quart left, and that was
about... Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's TV.
Well, you know, maybe he actually got down to a half pint.
Did Jim say something?
I see what he did there. Yes.
Did Jim say something?
No.
Good.
I did.
Gosh.
Troy's going to kill me, but that's okay. I don't mind.
Uh-huh. Well, we get this wrapped up next week with what?
Oh, well, yeah, we have Zahadoom.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it'll be... That's quite the episode. It's going to wrap the season up
right.
in a nice little neat bow and open up a whole can of worms full of questions for the next.
Okay, there is nothing neat about what this wraps up.
Oh,
with.
Well, we wrap up this part of the story, but we as I say, we're going to open up a whole new can of worms that's just going to absolutely crawl all over the place.
Yeah. And I've got to bring up, I know I'm stealing a piece of your thunder. We get another really, really great, amazing, historic genre actor are in the show next week.
Uh-huh.
David Hasselhoff?
I didn't hear that.
Michael Landon?
I didn't hear that. No, Jeff Corey.
Yeah. Yep. Who's been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, this is another one of those huge, how did this show land some of these huge names?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Anyway.
Good episode.
I actually have a suggestion for, yeah, great episode. I have a suggestion, though, for our listeners. Watch the two episodes, this episode, Shadow Dancing and Zahadoom, back to back. Because they really kind of fit a two-parter.
Yeah, they dovetail real well.
In fact, Zahadoom will literally pick up where this episode leaves off.
Almost as if there was just one writer.
Yeah. Gee, isn't it? Well, Straczynski wrote season 2, season 3, season 4, I think about half of season 1 or a third of season 1. And I know he didn't write all of season 5, but he wrote a pretty significant chunk of it. And, of course, he went in and added pieces to all of the other episodes as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, you don't see that degree of continuity. I think Blake 7 was, up until this point, the single most cohesive, you know, single writer. From what I've seen as far as some of Joe's comments online, I kind of understand why no one else would be crazy enough to do it. But that single writer thing is why this show just hangs together the way it does. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I do have a question.
All right.
Did we have any boom today?
Yeah.
We had boom all over the place.
There was debris from the boom.
Yeah.
So
there'll be boom tomorrow.
We're going to get more boom tomorrow. 2 days in a row worth of boom?
There's always boom tomorrow, Jim.
Oh.
Right, JP?
It's in the bylaws.
Ah.
Always boom tomorrow.
No, yeah. That's what I get for missing staff meetings, I guess.
Folks, I hope you loved the show. We loved recording this one. And good night, everyone.
Yep. Say good night, JP.
Good night, JP.
Podcast terminated.
Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.